Good afternoon. This is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the September 6, 2022 in-person meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners Management Committee. Telephonic access to this meeting is also being provided for the public. CJ Rotella, the Director of Information Technology for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this in-person and telephonic meeting.
Hello, this is CJ Rotella. This meeting will be recorded and available for your review on Rhode Island Housing's website within 3 to 5 business days after this meeting. Except for specific RI Housing staff, all callers will be muted during the meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, we please ask you to mute your telephones if you are not speaking. If during the meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with the audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
Thank you, CJ. This is Carol Ventura. Corinne Myers, General Counsel for Rhode Island Housing, will provide additional information on this meeting.
Good afternoon. This is Corinne Myers. This meeting is being held in person in keeping with the Rhode Island Open Meetings Act, with additional access being provided telephonically to the public. Today's agenda and related documents and information are available on our housing website. If the teleconference portion is interrupted, we will stop the meeting until audio can be restored. Committee Chairman James Thorson will preside at today's meeting. Commissioners and staff, when you speak during the meeting, please do state your name. And with that, Mr. Committee Chairman, I turn it back to you to call the meeting to order.
Thank you, Corinne. This is Jim Thorson, and I'd like to call the meeting to order and state that it's approximately 3:06 p.m. This meeting is called to order. I'd like Carol to conduct a roll call attendance of the Management Committee, Board of Commissioners, staff.
Thank you. Commissioner James Thorson.
Here.
Commissioner Designee Liam Byrne.
Present.
Sarah, would you state your name for the record?
Sarah Cabral.
Thank you, Commissioner Cabral. And Commissioner Saul.
Present.
Thank you. You have a quorum.
Thank you, Carol. It's Jim Thorson again. And with that, I'd like to introduce committee action number one, which is approval of the minutes of the Management Committee meeting held on June 6th.
Can I make a motion to approve the minutes?
We have a second.
Have to be
I'm the second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay. With that, I'd like to introduce committee action number two, which is a recommendation for approval of external charitable donations and contributions. And with that, I'd like to introduce James Comer, Deputy Executive Director, who will present committee action number two. James?
Good afternoon. This is James Comer. We have one matter, one contribution before the group today, and that is a $225 donation to the Providence Journal Reader's Choice Awards. It is not surprising that our home ownership group is up for the top mortgage lender that we're going with.
That's correct.
Okay. Top, top mortgage lender in the state. They're one of the three finalists, and we're sending three representatives of the home ownership group to attend in the hopes that they will clinch the title and be able to be there and enjoy it. So not surprising, the great work that they do. Well worth the dollars to send them to this event.
Is that it?
That is it, unless you have any questions.
Okay. So, it's James Thorson again. Do I have a motion to recommend approval of committee action number two? And please state your name.
Leanne, I make a motion to approve.
I'll second it. All those.
I have a comment.
Oh.
Just to congratulate the homeownership group on this recommendation.
Great job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That motion carries. And with that, what I'd like to do is to continue with committee action number three, recommendation for approval of pre-qualification of residential real estate appraisal firms. And with that, Peter Pedonis, the Director of Home Ownership, will present committee action number three. Peter?
Good afternoon. This is Peter Pedonis. This RFA seeks approval to establish a roster of residential real estate appraisals to support the single-family origination and loan servicing areas. Of course, we must engage with appraisers to to validate the collateral, both on the loan origination side and on the loan servicing side, specifically for distressed properties. Last year, we ordered approximately 220 appraisals through the home ownership division, and we expect to order around 70 appraisals this year through the loan servicing division, specifically for distressed properties. In May, we issued an RFP seeking proposals from qualified Rhode Island appraisers, and we received 10 responses. A selection committee composed of professionals from the home ownership and loan servicing division evaluated the responses and scored them appropriately according to a select group of criteria. There were 10 firms, or also said 100% of the firms that responded were approved for the roster, and we seek approval to engage with those entities for a period of 2 years with an option to review each engagement for an additional year. Happy to take any questions.
Want to do questions after
motion? Let's do questions after motion. Have a motion?
I make a motion to approve.
Second to Jim Thorpe. Any comments, questions? Leanne?
I have a question, Peter, about the cost of the appraisal is paid for by the borrower, or?
So on the residential side, the cost is passed to the borrower, absolutely. Okay. On the loan servicing side, on the distressed property side, do you want to talk how that's paid?
So if the borrower ultimately reinstates their loan, the cost is passed through to them. If they don't reinstate, it's an expense to us.
Okay. The reason I ask is because, and maybe it's just based on the extent of the approval, but it seems like there's a pretty significant range in the cost, 175 to 675, or yeah, 675. So is that just dependent on the agency or the type of appraisal they're doing, or?
So there are several different types of appraisals. There's an FHA appraisal, there's a 203K appraisal, there's a conventional appraisal, there's a full appraisal, there's a drive-by, exterior inspection only. So it depends on the actual on the loan that is being sought, and there is generally a direct correlation between the price and the time the appraiser spends preparing the report.
Got it. Thank you for explaining that.
Thank you, Peter. And the motion is on the floor. I guess we call for a vote, right?
Yes, we do.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So there we go. Thank you, Peter. That brings us to committee action number 4, which is a recommendation for approval of pre-qualification of commercial real estate appraisal and market study firms. And for that, we have Ann Berman.
Thank you. This is Ann Berman. So like Peter's home ownership team, the multifamily group also maintains a roster of appraisers, and we also issued an RFP in the spring. So this request for action is for authorization to establish a roster of commercial real estate appraisal and market study for analysis firms to provide industry standard appraisals and market studies for the multifamily real estate lending program. We utilize appraisals and market studies in nearly all our transactions to ensure our loan recommendations are consistent with our multifamily underwriting requirements, and we are also now ordering them as part of the site acquisition program so that every acquisition we make, we're not paying more than the appraisal value. So we're ordering a lot more appraisals than we have in the past. We maintain a roster of qualified firms and select an appraiser for each development project through an RFQ tailored to the specific assignment. So when we issued the RFP, we posted it on our website. We also posted it on the state division of purchasing website. We also emailed all of the appraisers on our list, as well as all of the appraisers on the state list and Mass housing list. We've always had a hard time attracting appraisers to Rhode Island because there's so much business in Mass through Mass housing. So good news is we actually received 9 firms, 3 of which are new to Rhode Island housing. reviewed, we had a committee based on development folks and the appraisers on the executive team. We reviewed them, and we would like to recommend that all nine firms that submitted that are on the list in attachment A be approved. Happy to answer any questions.
I think we'll take the question after the motion. Do we have a motion?
Leanne, I make a motion to approve.
And I'll second. I do have a question.
Okay.
All right. You had mentioned how many firms that you've done business with versus new firms?
We have a list of about six. We tended to, the appraisers these days are just incredibly busy, and we go to ask, and they're like, too busy, can't even, you know, won't get to you for 3 months. So it's, you know, oftentimes we're down to, you know, one or two firms who are have the capacity to take on a new assignment.
Looks like two firms on this list is probably
three
the
firms
great.
Three firms are new.
Yes.
And do you, because of what you just told me, I would suspect that there's a bulk of the work that actually goes to the firms that are at the ready. And so what's the distribution of work? Is it evenly spread, or is it more concentrated in a couple?
It's probably concentrated on three firms that have been consistently engaged in Rhode Island. Some of, and they're actually all three of them in Massachusetts, basically.
Oh, okay. I also noticed that there's rankings, just noticing this, that there's ranking for minority status and firms' minority status affirmative action program or activities. How is that gauged? Because there's like a fair amount of granularity on these rankings. That
yeah.
Do you believe that there's some sort of precise measurement for the second decimal point?
It's tough. So it's part of the sort of the standard RFP proposal that Rhode Island sends out, and several of these firms have so few employees, they're not technically required to have you know, an affirmative housing, I'm sorry, an affirmative action plan. So it's, you'll notice it's only 10% of the score. I don't think it had a significant impact on the ranking, and one of the reasons why we've kind of discounted, it's reflected in the score, but, you know, we're comfortable with all of the nine. We really feel like they're able to do the work.
Okay.
And it's a bonus if they have a plan.
Great. And how many people were on the grading committee?
There were seven, including me.
Okay. Wow. That's a lot.
Can I ask just a follow-up question? I was going to ask a similar question about the minority status from the action program compared to the single-family appraisers. There seems to be a lot more nuance here. Range of scores. Are any of these certified MWBEs, or have we not gotten responses from certified MWBEs, so we're just relying on their action?
I'd have to go back and find. I don't remember if they're certified.
Well, it's embarrassing. It's an embarrassing question, Josh, because that certification would likely come from my office.
Well,
well, there might be from other states as well.
From other
right?
states.
Oh, from other
yeah.
states. Okay.
Some of these are Massachusetts. They might be certified.
The reality is, all of these appraisals are based out of state.
Wow.
There are some on the state list who we still use, and a couple on the single family who are actually sort of licensed to do some of the, you know, medium-sized commercial that we also tap into, particularly on the SAT loans, and some of our smaller multifamily.
That's great. I'm really glad that you guys include this as part of all the RFPs. Especially when it comes to housing. We have a long history of sometimes ignoring MWB firms, and I know you're very devoted to making sure that we take that into consideration. Thankful just that you're doing so with the evaluation of these, finding a space where more firms can participate, whether it's appraisals or contractors. It's really across multiple functions that it's important to have these types of firms.
Any other questions?
Sorry, this is Leanne. Just a very quick one. Is the length of your term for these folks being on the roster also 2 years?
We hadn't quite honestly thought it. Last time it was 4 or 5 years.
Okay.
It's a lot of work to order these appraisals.
Yep.
To do this art review, with the appraisals we get are 150 pages.
Yeah. Got it. Thanks.
So we have a motion and a second, and we've had discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. That brings us to committee action number four, which is recommended. Wait a second. Number five. The recommendation for approval of reauthorization of engagement of Morris Manning and Martin, LLP. And Corinne, will you please present action number five?
Certainly. This is Corinne Myers speaking. Staff is recommending the re-engagement of a Washington, D.C. law firm called Morris Manning and Martin, LLP, for legal assistance in connection with HUD solicitation of performance-based contract administration services on a regional basis. The firm, and in particular attorneys Andy Moore and Kelly Kroll, were originally solicited and engaged by our sister agency, Mass Housing, with respect to a legal challenge to a previous HUD solicitation. If memory serves, that was in about 2012. And since that time, the New England HFAs have determined that their interests are aligned in this general manner. And now that there are some efficiencies to be gained by a shared representation. So the New England states have signed on individually as clients with this firm, including RA Housing in 2017 and 2018. And we are seeking to do so again now. The firm has particular expertise in federal procurement, both in strategy and in executing challenges. And they now have very deep familiarity with the CDBA program. Attorney Moore is not proposing to change the terms or fees from our previous engagement, only to restate our commitment to a shared counsel arrangement. Particularly given that the current style of procurement from HUD is slightly different than was published in the previous round, that 2017-2018 timeframe. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Do I have a motion?
This is Leanne. I make a motion to approve.
And I'll second. And I have a question, Corinne. Just to be clear, this is a legal detainer, right? Correct? Is that
correct?
And the fee, is it on a retainer or is it per hour, or how is that shared amongst the participating states?
We have an agreed upon fee with Attorney Moore. It's a discount from his standard hourly commercial rate. And depending on the nature of the particular project, we split the fees with the other states who are participating in the project.
So it's an hourly bill?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That was my question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it. And that brings us to committee item number six. Thank you, Corinne. It's Jim Thorson. Recommendation for approval of engagement of a real estate tax service vendor. And with that, I'd like to introduce Ms. Leslie McKnight, Assistant Deputy Director of Loan Servicing.
Thank you. Good afternoon. This is Leslie McKnight, Director of Loan Servicing. Good afternoon. I am an RFA for approval to engage a real estate tax service vendor. On July 1st, Rhode Island Housing issued a request for proposal for which it sought proposals from qualified firms to provide real estate tax support services for the agency's mortgage loan servicing and sub-servicing portfolios. The RFP was posted on Rhode Island Housing's website and the website of the State of Rhode Island Division of Purchases. It was also distributed to Rhode Island Housing's RFP mail distribution list and sent directly to vendors who perform this work. Two national vendors submitted responses. The responses were reviewed and scored by a committee of staff members based on the criteria set forth in Attachment B. Loretta LLC received the highest score. Loretta is our current real estate tax service vendor. Staff found their application to be user-friendly and have been satisfied with their performance under the existing contract. Although per loan pricing proposed by CoreLogic Tax Solutions
Incorporated is lower than Loretta's proposed per loan pricing fee. CoreLogic has also proposed a conversion fee for each loan, which will result in an overall higher cost over the life of the contract. Staff is recommending the re-engagement of Loretta LLC. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Do I have a motion?
This is Leanne. I make a motion to approve.
Yeah, I'll second. I have a question, Leslie.
Sure.
So just to clarify, it was judged to be a better economic overall value to go with the recommended vendor rather than one that had a lower initial price. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I just wanted to make sure I was clear on that. That was my question. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Ayes have it. So this brings us to committee action item number 7. And that is recommendation for approval of appointment of MERS corporate signing officers. Once again, we'll have Peter Pagonis, Director of Home Ownership, who will present on action number 7. Peter?
Thank you. This is Peter Pagonis. This RFA is for the approval of signing officers for the purpose of Rhode Island Housing membership in the Mortgage Electronic Registration System, Inc., known as MERS. MERS owns and operates an electronic registry which tracks the servicing rights and ownership of mortgages located throughout the country. We became a MERS member in 2016. As part of this membership, each year we obtain a corporate resolution from MERS through which certain Rhode Island Housing employees are designated as MERS signing officers. And as part of that designation, are granted limited authority to perform duties such as executing mortgage discharges on behalf of MERS. MERS specifies that MERS signing officers must be officers and or employees of the MERS member. With this RFA, we seek approval of having the Chief Financial Officer, Assistant Deputy Director of Loan Servicing, Director of Home Ownership, Assistant Director of Home Ownership, and Assistant Director of Loan Servicing as appointed as MERS signing officers. Thank you.
Peter, thank you. It's Jim Thorson again. Do I have a motion?
Simply going to make a motion to approve.
Second. Any questions? Hearing none, all those in favor, aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it. This brings us to item number 8. Very good. Which is a recommendation for approval of the delegation of corporate authority, and we're going back to Corinne, who will present on action number 8. Corinne?
Thank you. This is Corinne speaking. This request for action is for the authorization of designated officers and employees to execute and deliver contracts, documents, or other instruments which may be entered into by RI Housing under its enabling legislation. The designation before you authorizes the chair, vice chair, executive director, or her designee, deputy executive director, and chief financial officer to sign on behalf of the corporation. This designation will supersede any previous designation. Staff considers this a housekeeping matter. RI Housing's corporate signatory authority was last updated by the board in September 2021. Our goal is to review and renew the authority on approximately an annual basis to allow for any changes, titles, staffing, or any reorganization of functions. We ask that this designation be approved for presentation to the board. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Do I have a motion?
Leanne, I make a motion to
and I'll second. Do we have any questions? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it. This brings us to committee action number 9, which is a recommendation for authority to issue homeownership opportunity bonds in the amount of $250 million. And for that, I'd like to introduce Ms. Bernadette MacArthur, Director of Finance, who will present on action number 9.
Thank you. This is Bernadette MacArthur. This request for single family bonding authority is a fairly routine item. It comes to the board about once a year. to allow us to continue our single family bond program. Our most recent request was made last December, and our latest single family bond issuance was executed this past April. We anticipate that the funds from that issuance will be fully utilized by the end of this month. So based on our current pipeline of registrations and our production estimates, staff anticipates issuing about $250 million in single family bonds or to fund new mortgages or refund existing bonds over the next 12 months. This resolution would authorize that issuance, and the authority would expire on December 31st, 2023. So it is our request to the committee to authorize the issuance of up to $250 million in single family bonds over the next 12 to 18 months to fund the homeownership opportunity bond.
Do I have a motion?
This is Leanne. I make a motion to approve.
I'll second it, and I have a few questions.
I have a question, Leanne. So the last issuance was expected, was the last issuance expected to last the same amount of time that you anticipate this next issuance? Because obviously it's been a more truncated period.
Right. Well, when we issued in April, we had funds left over from our prior issuance to kind of spend through. So we expended those funds before we dipped into that, which at the time was our HOP 77 issuance pot of funds. So it does look like it was a truncated amount of time this time around, but due to the fact that last time around we had funds left over.
Sure. Okay. And this 250 is expected to last 12 to 18 months?
More so on the 12 side. We give ourselves the flexibility in case we run into any sort of market challenges with bringing something to market that are out of our control. So we give ourselves that timing flexibility there.
Yeah, I guess the basis of my question is obviously home prices are up. So, you know, it's been, and I know that has also decreased volume, but I know you traditionally come to the board for approval of around $250 million. So I guess, could you just like speak to that a little bit?
Sure. We find ourselves in a really interesting place because we're able to offer advantageous rates in a market where rates are rising. So while the market in general has seen a decline in speaking to production estimates, we anticipate a slight decline. We haven't seen that much of a rundown in our pipeline over the past few months. So we're funding registrations that have already entered the pipeline. We're probably about halfway registered into this next issuance that we'll bring to market. So we're keeping up where, and then entering into sort of a place of slightly declined.
Okay.
I would also mention that based on where the market is today, the bond market, and market right now, it's more advantageous for us to bond the loans. That may change. I'm kind of hoping it will change a little bit, but so it's possible that we'll go through this 250 quicker than we did the last one.
So I guess does it make sense to borrow more? Obviously, each issuance has its own set of costs. So
right. So this isn't the actual issuance. This is just authority from the board that we can go up to 250. So we do it in chunks. Our next bond issuance is probably going to be about $125 million.
Okay.
And then in the next 4 months or so, we'll do another $125 million. So it'll be based on the pipeline at the time. We could ask for more from the board, which will last us longer, but, you know, we try to keep it in smaller amounts to keep the board informed of how the pipeline is working.
Thank you.
And the question I have is, you'd mentioned that there was some spinach on our chin from the last issue. How much in bond proceeds do we have that have been not put to work yet?
We fully utilize every issuance.
Okay.
We timed it differently last time because of what we saw the market doing. At this point in time, we have $34 million that we expect to fully expend this month. And at that point, we'll...
And how do you evaluate the size of the bond issue versus the price rise versus interest rates? How do you factor that all in your decision on how to size the bond issue?
Why we have consultants.
I think we really pay close attention to the pipeline. So people are registering loans now that will close in 2 months. So we project out that pipeline, and you know, we may put an inflation factor in there as well. And we can change up until the point that we actually sell the bonds. We can, you know, we can upsize the bond issuance if we need to, if we find that prices have increased, or we can downsize if our pipeline has decreased.
So with this authority, you get maximum flexibility and you gauge now the basis of the input from your consultants as well as the market conditions.
That's correct.
Factoring in demand. Right.
And I do want to recognize we do have very good advisors. They were in recently and met with us. And
who do we use?
JP.
Yeah, so we've got different underwriters. We have JP Morgan, we have Morgan Stanley, and RBC, Royal Bank of Canada, actually. And we have a quantitative consultant who also assists us with the kind of the details of the issuance.
Okay.
Josh Saul here. Unless you have any other questions.
No, go ahead, Josh.
I just have a couple of questions. Like all states, we get a limited volume cap, right? And I was wondering if we are using these on single family, how that, what the trade-off is there versus using them on multifamily. I know we met with a lot of, or staff here met with a lot of the investors, and when you use them for single family, you're not leveraging 4% tax credits. It's really important that we're maximizing our resources, spending these bonds in a way that leverages those that we have available. So I just wanted to make sure that we are taking that into account, and that we're not leaving tax credits, free tax credits, on the table. I assume our volume cap is much more than $250,000, but I want to make sure that that's correct.
Sure.
And understand if there's any consideration how you balance those two moving forward, or historically, being a new and being a new member, you know, I might not fully comprehend all the questions that are here, but it's very important to really fully utilize our resources and those tax credits available if we can through our private activity bonds.
If I could, Josh, there's another board in the state pantheon of boards that's called the Public Finance Management Board that's responsible for the allocation of cap. And there's a methodology by which they allocate a certain amount to Rhode Island Housing and then to private issuers of bonds, private purpose bonds, and then whatever is left over reverts back to Rhode Island Housing. And they keep tabs on this on an annual basis and roll it forward. So there's a really a protocol for how that's organized and distributed. And RI Housing is usually there to sop up whatever excess there is and carry it forward as necessary. Did I get that right?
That's right.
You did.
Great.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I would add that in the allocation between single family and multifamily, we've never had to deny a 4% deal. We've always had enough volume cap to apply to any multifamily deal that is ready and able to use it. In going forward, we are going to have to look closely at how we allocate it because we do expect that pipeline to increase on the multifamily side. So I think, you know, when we get our allocation this year, we will have to look a little bit closer at how much we're putting towards multifamily versus single family. That does mean that single family rates might increase because we're going to have to do taxable bonds to fund the single family loan. So it's kind of a balance that we've got to figure out the best way to utilize that volume cap.
So I appreciate these questions because the last two issues on the docket were largely ministerial in nature. This is not ministerial in nature. This is size. And while staff has experience in managing this and there's sort of a rhythm to it, it's not perfunctory for all the different factors that we talked about and what has to be considered, as well as what you had raised. But do we have any other questions before we move this? Thank you for your questions. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it. Let's move on. Item number 10. That is the recommendation of approval of fiscal year 2023 operating budget and staffing changes. And for that, we're going to introduce Errol Ventura, who will present on action number 10. Errol.
Thank you. And I apologize for those of you hearing the third time, Director. So. I'm very happy to present our 23 budget. In addition to seeking approval of the budget, we're also seeking approval to add 4 team members to the agency. One position within Christine Hunsinger's area, or a strategic planner, so not the official title, but this person will assist them in developing strategic initiatives for the agency. Two positions within our IT area to support all of the staff that we have working here, and then one position to work with Tara and her team, primarily on the grants that are coming into us from the state. So I'm going to walk through a number of charts and slides that are included with the RFA. And big picture, we expect that our operations will remain stable, even with an anticipated slight reduction in home ownership, single family volume. Fiscal year 23 operating expenses will be slightly higher than what we budgeted in 22, but below our 22 forecast. Administrative expenses for state and COVID-related programs are a large driver of our operating expenses, as well as technology improvements. We expect that the decline in investor demand for single-family mortgages will negatively impact mortgage sales, so we'll rely more heavily on bonding, 80% of volume versus TBA. Rising interest rates and a lack of inventory may slow production in our homeownership area, and Peter and his team is projecting a drop of approximately 17%. The infusion of state and federal dollars will allow us to increase production and preservation in our multifamily area, resulting in higher fee income in the development group. In addition, within the governor's budget is a $30 million allocation for down payment assistance, $17,500 grant that will be available to first-time homebuyers, and we're hoping that spurs some additional production for Peter and his team. Our budget projects net income around $5.4 million, which is a decrease over our forecasted net income of $2.3 million. So let me direct you to page 3 of the action. Director, do you want this? Do you want more copies? Ignore my notes.
Tablet time.
Agency net interest income is projected to be down slightly. Single-family production is estimated at $420 million, with the greatest percentage of volume through tax-exempt financing. This also impacts our gains, which will be down due to the reliance upon bonding ownership activity. Our fee income is projected at $28 million. Much of that $28 million is related to our administration of the state's federal dollars. And on the expense side, this fiscal year we've been able to reduce our contribution to our loan loss reserve. We feel confident that we have adequate coverage for our first mortgages, but we'll add $1 million to the fund for second mortgage products, down payment assistance. Pages 4 and 5 outline the various programs. We're supposed to fund $2.7 million of agency operating funding. They include rental assistance programs, some of which we inherited from the state but continue to support, investment in this neighborhood development fund, a community development program to support developments in our portfolio, down payment assistance for non-MRB homebuyers, and the continued investment in the successful VOS program that we administer in collaboration with OER. And lastly, we budgeted operating expenses to the agency at $49.8 million, which is an increase over our 22 budget, but below forecasted operating expenses for fiscal year 22. Operating expenses will continue to go down as we wind down the rent relief RI program, which is slated to close at the end of September. Whatever funds remaining will be transferred to the state for their use on various programs that they decide to fund. We provided a few charts comparing our revenue and expenses annually since 2019. On page 6, we provided you with our projected revenue and expenses by major division, development contributing almost 36% of revenue, with expenses spread fairly evenly across our major divisions. On page 7, the distribution of our revenue areas, with fee income providing the greatest percentage of revenue, and on page 8, the distribution of our expenses. Lastly, on page 9, we've provided a breakdown of expenses company-wide. We're proposing a 3.5% merit increase. Temporary help will remain high, with temp staff manning several federal relief programs. And, of course, we always budget increases in our benefits area. We never really see that area go down at all. And you'll note large expense reductions in advertising, consulting, and outside services. That's directly related to the wind down of Kara, would you like to add anything?
No,
or Lisa? Lisa, anything you'd like to add?
No.
Thank you, Carol. So with that, I'd like a motion.
This is Leanne. I make a motion to approve.
And I'll second. We're going to have questions.
Of course.
Okay. So, Carol, presumably a large portion of the decrease of the budget relates to the inclusion of the rent relief program and the drawdown related to that on resources that were temporary in nature, and therefore that's why we see, that's a big reason why we see such a dramatic drawdown on that. Are there other items that you can point to in particular that would that we should be paying attention to, like, I don't know, like, say, like software? Is a big ticket item that's an increase?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the major drivers of our software area is our development and asset management groups. They are implementing what I think is a fantastic platform for both of these major areas, and that is the ProLink software that will allow us to capture data on all of the projects that we fund, all the way through to completion, and then handing off to asset management with all of the data related to a particular development. And I know Ann and Mike have been working diligently on this. Ann, anything you'd like to add on that software?
No. It's we call it like a life cycle management tool. And in addition to the data, just the seamless handoff from development to asset management is going to be great. It's a document retention system. All of the documents associated with a project, over the last 40 years will be captured. If you type in 123 Maple Street, you get all of the work that's ever been done at 123 Maple Street over the last 40 years. So we're really excited.
Another thing I'll mention, Director, is we have to make decisions about rent relief and what we do with data that's currently stored in that system. So while the program is ending and winding down, access to that data will be important moving forward, not only for Rhode Island Housing, but also for the state. So we have to make decisions about how we manage that data, what we do with that, and what the costs are associated with that, whether it transfers to the state, whether or not it resides at Rhode Island Housing.
I want to echo that in terms of the importance of just data and our funding decisions that we're making, both between the state and the HFA. I assume that that'll all be shared between everyone as we put new resources into development, but that having that information really will make us able to make better decisions about how we invest both HFA funds and state money into projects and how it lives throughout the cycle of projects and going back with the same developers or other developers, contractors, whatever it may be, as well as helping individuals or families who have received assistance in one form or another. So it's a really important investment.
Right. So, Carol, we see a $7.5 million decrease in the administrative costs with a $2.8 million increase in personal services, the bulk of which is in salaries. Can you talk more about these roles and how much salary that will be in these four positions that are being proposed?
I'm sorry, Director, I missed you.
There's an increase of about just under $1.5 million in salaries in the budget, which represents more than half of the increase in personnel services. Can you talk a little bit more about these positions? In particular, can we talk about how these will enhance your capabilities going forward? And I just want to make sure we address some concerns that have been raised about making sure that these are complementary positions to an overall housing effort for the state that will be run out of the housing department.
Is that right? There really is no housing department. It's the Secretary of
Housing. No, the Department of Housing that will be created in January 1st.
Okay.
I can, if it's helpful, I can add some context here.
I just want to be sure that we're all clear on how we have an integrated effort in providing for the objectives that were put forward in legislation that was enacted in the most recent session. Is that a fair way to phrase that question, or do you have
everything?
So let me start with the three support positions. We have two positions in IT that truly are supporting the platforms within the agency, the technology platforms within the agency. The grant compliance position will, of course, support some of the state programs that are being implemented right now in capturing data and ensuring that we're compliant with all of the SFRF regulations. More busy work than anything else. The strategic position that will be shifted into Christine's department will really be looking at opportunities, right? Opportunities where we can improve in the state. And some of the top priorities for this position would be, how do we connect our most vulnerable Rhode Islanders with mainstream resources like Medicaid to support them in their housing so that we don't have people constantly cycling in and out of housing and are always unstable within their housing situation. So I think that's where we can collaborate more closely with the housing department when it's created. The research and the information that comes along with this position would certainly help inform whatever activities the state would take on.
Okay.
So the follow-up question, though, is there a change in, is it an executive division position, right? And I believe from $111,000 to $160,000 salary.
It's a director position.
It's a what?
A director position.
Under the executive position, though, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So what does this person add or bring that we don't already have? How's it not duplicative? And then secondly, just in the legislation, what the legislature charged my position to do, Secretary of Housing, was to review and assess the function, including of the quasi-public agencies, such as Rhode Island Housing, and make recommendations of what functions and structures should be in each department, including the Department of Housing. And within that, charging the Department of Housing to coordinate with all agencies related to housing initiatives, as well as the propagation of rules, et cetera, et cetera. So there's really a question of what's, broadly speaking, what's the role of the HFA versus Department of Housing. And I'm wondering if right now is the moment to expand on an executive division position that I understand by all means is really important to look at these social initiatives and how they fit into the programs, and given how much money the state puts into housing through the HFA, that these parts are all connected, but whether we should table it for now and really look at the reorganization that will be happening per what the legislature charged, as opposed to expanding executive functions right now of our HFA at the same time that multiple new positions are being added to the Department of Housing, and the Department of Housing is being asked to coordinate with our health-related agencies, with Department of Business Regulation, and in the enabling legislation, that's what the focus is on, and whether those two functions are duplicative, and then again, how is this position any different from what the executive team already does, as in the Chief Innovation Strategy Officer or other positions that lie within the agency?
So there was a lot there. Let me try to break it down a little bit. I think this position is important because the other members of the executive team are busy doing what it is they do every day. And so this is an opportunity to have an individual on staff that can be laser focused on important issues for the state as a whole, not just the HFA, but for the state as a whole. So that speaks to the time available for executives in this agency to be able to do this work. And I don't know if there was another question in there.
I think, I mean, to the essence of it, you're asking what the state as a whole does, not the HFA. But at the same time, the legislature is creating a Department of Housing. to make sure that we are coordinating those things beyond the HFA and coordinating that between the HFA and different agencies. And I understand there's an executive team, and they're extremely busy. I've been in meetings with them. They're great. But I'm not quite understanding what the role of the HFA is in coordinating what other agencies are doing versus what the Department of Housing is doing. And I would strongly encourage just to re-examine whether this position is needed at this time and how it interacts, overlaps, or complements what the Department of Housing is doing and what the legislature has specifically set up for them to do.
Well, I can't speak to what the housing department is doing right now, only what we have for initiatives in Rhode Island housing and what we're looking to advance. I think this position would complement anything you would create at the state level, Josh.
Maria.
I'm not sure that I have a question on this, but what this discussion is making me think about is my constant request back to the executive team over the last 3 years that the agency consider being less focused on compliance, which I'm not saying that we shouldn't be focused on compliance, but to acknowledge that the new normal is that nothing will ever be normal again, and you know, we had a pandemic, and then I feel like it's inevitable that there will be something else that turns the world as we know it on its head, kind of in repeat forever. And so it's of high value to me, and I know of high value to the treasurer, that this agency looked for every way it possibly can to be responsive and to plan for what we don't know is coming next. And in that way, what I've read of this position is about, and heard today, is about having this agency be a better partner with organizations that are already on the ground, looking to existing resources as a way to capitalize on and leverage the resources that the agency already has, and to try to address gaps where they can. And so I'm quite confused about the pushback on the agency doing this work, and to me it sounds quite urgent because we don't know what the next thing is and when it will come, and so I don't know why we'd wait another year to have that. I guess I politely disagree.
What is the role though of the Chief Innovation Strategy? Maybe I just don't understand the organizational chart. There has to be a clear.
We're collaboratively with state agencies, nonprofits, partners, and community stakeholders to develop and execute highly strategic, innovative, and collaborative new approaches to address gaps in housing policy for homeless, low-income, and special needs populations.
Right, but what is the current chief strategy and policy innovation, and how does that differ? How is this role needed?
This is a new position.
But they're reporting directly to an existing position.
Yes.
That existing position, what department do they oversee, and how are they not doing this work right now? It seems like the creation of a new position is to fill a gap that currently exists. And my question is that gap at the HFA, or is it at the state level within the Department of Housing, and how do we examine that a little bit more broadly to understand that? And I ask this also because it's not a small position. It's a permanent position at quite a high salary range with fringe benefits that impacts the net revenue on a year-to-year basis. Right now it's $5.3 million and has an impact really on things like credit ratings at the end of the day. And we want to make sure that the HFA, we're growing a Department of Housing and the HFA, that we're doing that together in a concerted way. So we're not just adding positions everywhere, but instead coordinating in an improved way between the HFA and the existing agencies.
So this action at the management committee level goes up to the full board, correct?
Yes, sir.
For full consideration. I think that we should have this discussion at the full board level. I think we should pass this out of committee and up to the full board. And we'll have some additional discussions in the meantime, I assure you.
And so with that, what I'd like to do is call the motion. We already had the motion, didn't we? So all those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. This will go to before the full board, and we'll have a, we should plan on that agenda and having a full discussion on this. And I think that we'll have some discussions in the meantime.
Perhaps before the board.
Yeah, we'll prepare for it.
Great. Thank you.
And so this is Jim Thorson. It appears that there's no further business, so I'd like to request a motion to adjourn.
Yeah, I make a motion to adjourn.
And I second it. And all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And the meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Management Committee is now adjourned. Thank you for participating.